first thing is always create trust with the counterparty. And how do you create trust? By understanding the other party, understanding yourself, knowing yourself, your strengths and weaknesses, and also your communication style as well, and then also understanding, trying to understand the other people as well, and trying to put yourself in their shoes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the new episode of VEU Executive Academy podcast, where we give you exclusive insights from some of the brightest leaders today, who all have one thing in common. They are or were students of our MBA programs. I'm Chedomir Pushica, your host, and it is my task to ask the right questions so that you can learn more about the person, their industry, their mindset, and how they manage to bring positive change to businesses and their communities.
Hi, dear listeners, and welcome to the new episode of the VEU Executive Academy podcast. And my guest today is Elena Petrova. She is currently working for the AI Group as head of group content and broadcasting. And we're going to see a lot of talk about the creative things that she's involved in and the technical side of it, and also the international business development, which is something she has been working on for many years now in her career. She started in the IT industry, worked there for 10 years, and has a very rich international experience. We will also touch upon negotiating, what negotiating skills you need to succeed in the international environment. So if you're up for it, welcome, Elena.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you.
Same here. So, Elena, I want to ask you about international business development. You come from Bulgaria, right?
Exactly.
And you're now based in Austria, have been based here for the past 10 plus years.
Exactly.
And you have seen the world, worked around the world with many companies, many nations. And how does it work? Why international business development? How did that attract you? And how did you actually start working there?
I was always attracted to communicate with different cultures and to know, first of all, and then to communicate with different cultures, different nations. So from my really early days in my professional career, I started working at young age, almost finishing school. And during my whole education, I was always working and globally. The first 10 years of my experience were focused more on European market. And now in the last 10 years, I'm focused more globally, expanding our businesses to different continents. So, what I like most is really this dynamics and also the different way people communicate to each other. And everyone has their own way of understanding things and also communicating and achieving as well. So it's always interesting to discuss with different people from different nations and reach together certain goals.
Just before this conversation, when we were talking, you're also the Global Executive MBA alumna, and you mentioned your amazing experience and also a lot of difficulties in dealing with different nations. And this one particular project that you mentioned that you worked on with your colleagues from the US, from China, and from Europe, right?
Exactly.
Was proved to be particularly difficult and challenging for various reasons. So I would like you to tell us more about that.
Yes, so last year actually was quite interesting year for me. So next to my work in A1 Group, I was also part of Global Executive MBA, and it was really amazing time. As well, we were a group of 39 members, and we came from more than 20 different nationalities. So it was really, really an intercultural experience to communicate with all of us, actually. And as part of the MBA, we had a global project where we were supposed to launch a new product or a new service and so on. So we had to work in a team with, as you said, two people from Europe, two people from Asia, two people from US, and it was quite interesting. You realize how we communicate in a completely different way. You realize that you need to, of course, build trust at the beginning so that the work actually will be smooth afterwards, but it's not always easy because you do it virtually. So for most of the time, you don't meet each other. You were meeting only virtually. It was really interesting and challenging, I would say, in some moments. But at the end, we had a successful result, which is the most important thing.
What was the most difficult thing. What would you say is the highlight of how do the Americans approach communication, and how does that differ from the Asian way, or let's say in this case, the Chinese way?
So the way we communicated with our US colleagues was actually we were quite lucky. We were able to quickly set the grounds for a good communication. However, there were differences. So sometimes for them it's easier to present, for them it's easier to jump. We in Europe somehow we tend a little bit more to prepare, and in most of the cases. And on the other side, they are more outgoing, so they could immediately decide and do things quickly. So we in Europe are more straightforward in communicating with people. So especially from Central and Eastern Europe, I would say this is a common trait somehow. You put things on the table and you openly discuss them transparently, and so we're willing to find a solution immediately, even if there is an argument. There is no problem if we have a fight. You know, sometimes during a fight, you can have a very nice outcome out of that, which I would not say that this is the right approach, for example, for our colleagues in Asia, because they would prefer to be more diplomatic and not to actually put everything straightforwardly. So really to discuss things in a completely different way. They would not say anything negative to you during a discussion or a call, but then you can see that they actually do not agree with you at all. So 0% agreement, but they just didn't express it in the way we would like to hear it. So yeah, it was quite interesting to see how we can structure the communication so that we understand each other at the end.
How long did this project last?
It was approximately 6 months.
That's enough time to get to know each other.
Exactly.
And so I would guess that probably in the beginning it was not so easy, but maybe over time you understood each other's differences and bridged them.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, the most important and crucial point is when you have a challenging environment, is really to face it. So to face the issues. So when we established more regular communication with each other, suddenly realize actually what are the differences in the mentality or the way we understand things. And then it's making it easier. Mm-hmm. So I think more regular discussions were key for us.
And what about the time differences? Because the three different continents, it was probably very difficult. Someone would have to stay awake very late at night.
Exactly. We always had somebody who is really very sleepy in the morning, early in the morning, and one person for whom it's already late.
Yeah.
And we were somehow lucky in the middle of the day in Europe.
Okay, so Europe.
So we were actually the lucky ones.
The best.
Exactly.
Okay, so Elena, now I want to also ask you something about international cultural differences, what you noticed. This was a great example of how these differences could affect business. But also, it's not just the American and the Chinese experience that you have, but also a lot of Central European, South European experience, and the Western Europe, probably where you work a lot, and where, let's say, these cultural differences probably don't always show immediately or are very subtle, but they do influence the way we work, conduct business, and may have an influence on the success of a project, of a deal. So can you, let's say, pick up some of the most interesting negotiations you had or business deals that kind of involved this communication barrier or overcoming the communication cultural barrier?
Okay, let me think. I was really involved in multiple negotiations in my professional life. It's definitely interesting to work in, also in Europe, as you mentioned. In Europe, we also have so many different nations, and although we have a more common approach, still there are a lot of differences also in Western Europe and Central and Eastern Europe and so on. And me coming from Bulgaria, living in Austria, also it came with a lot of adjustment, let's say. So, as I mentioned, we are more open, more straightforward, a little bit warmer, let's say. It's not difficult for us to start a discussion, to approach a person and to give access also to yourself and to the information which somebody would need. So there are not no company levels, for example. We believe that we can achieve everything, right? Coming also from a little bit poorer countries, you know, you need to fight. And also me in my family. So I'm not coming from a rich family, for example. So I'm completely self-made. So you know that you depend on yourself. You trust yourself and you need to fight so that you need to prove yourself as well. Which is different, for example, here, the situation in Austria is different, where actually life is more comfortable, so people do not need to constantly fight for their development, right? Because they have it for granted, so here there is definitely a difference. But still, if you communicate only with people who are just like you, it's going to be boring, right? So I really appreciate and love these differences in each other. And funny project, I have to think, I have really a lot of stories, again, with Asian company. So part of my job is as head of broadcasting in A1 Group. We decided at a certain point to make the bridge to Asia. So we provide technical services to TV channels in Europe. And a few years ago, we said, okay, let's investigate Asian market as well. So this was quite an interesting for me experience because, as I mentioned earlier, we needed to negotiate the contract virtually, so we couldn't meet so often. And it was a challenge because the way I expect things to happen is completely different than them. For example, I would like to make a decision quickly and so on. They needed to discuss it with all their managers and so on, so you need to wait. And then there were most probably more than 15, 16 iterations of the contract until we finalized it with a personal meeting at the end.
Okay.
And so, yeah. So that's a lot of examples.
I can imagine that. And if you remember anything during our conversation, just feel free to interrupt me. Now, when you mentioned what you're doing at the A1 Group, I would like to, yes, take a broader look at the creative industry. What you mentioned with the procurement, content procurement and broadcasting, It's technical solutions. But let's separate this creative industry into creation, where we have the creators of content, and we're talking about big studios, for example, Netflix, HBO, Amazon Prime, let's say, companies like that. And one very important note, A1 just won, thanks to you, a contract with Netflix. I want to ask you more about that and how that went. So we have production, we have distribution, which is the technical way of delivering content to the consumers, which are the third part in this value chain. So if you would like to start with your own position, which is this technical part of delivering content, buying content and delivering it, and then we can maybe move to the other two.
Yeah, so A1 participates in several of the stages of the TV content life cycle, let's say. My work is covering, as you said, the distribution of the content. So one part is the technical distribution. We are one of the most reliable technical partners for TV channels and operators in Europe and in Asia. On the other side, we procure content, so we buy TV content for the use of A1 Group subsidiaries in Europe. We have 7 A1 subsidiaries in Central and Eastern Europe, and for some international content vendors, it makes sense that we negotiate on group level in order to achieve synergies and economies of scale, of course, for the group. So this is the other part of the business. And content creation, I'm a little bit connected since recently as a new member of International AMI organization. So I became a member this year, in the mid of the year. So there, actually, I'm really deep diving into the content creation and a lot of small series, movies, and how they create them and how they make contests for them and how they actually reach a distribution partner. So this is also very interesting for me and area in which I would like definitely to develop myself in future.
Okay, excellent. And now I want to know, when you say the group level, you're negotiating contracts with these producers, let's say, big TV.
Producers. We negotiate content with, you mentioned, streaming platforms. And also different linear channels as well.
For example?
For example, any kind of Viasat, for example, or Viacom channels or Discovery channels, Disney, etc. So they have linear part, which is broadcasted on the normal TV screens. And then we have also the streaming part, which you just mentioned, like Netflix, Disney Plus, Prime, etc.
And when you mentioned also 7 subsidiaries, right, in different countries, how does this content find its way to the consumers in these markets? What's the part of A1 in this?
We are a telecommunication provider in all these markets, telecommunication leader in most of these markets. So we provide a variety of services, starting from mobile to broadband, many, many other services. So TV is part of the services which we bundle together with our native, let's say, propositions. And of course, all the markets, they keep the local flavor. So a winning strategy is not to apply the same model everywhere, because the markets, they're completely different from each other. So every local subsidiary, they apply it in a different way. However, we on group level, we negotiate for all of them. And how they reach the end subscriber is actually their responsibility and based on their knowledge, local knowledge.
Okay, and do you have an example of one or two different ways of reaching end consumers in two different markets, let's say?
Of course, it's different bundles. For example, in one country like Austria, here you would know we're bundling TV service with broadband. There are different marketing campaigns which are made in the different markets. So there are different number of channels, for example, in the different markets. Yeah, it's not a common approach, definitely, here.
And one of the videos that I saw that you also showed me before this conversation was of these big antennas, look very much like the SETI organization, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Life intelligence. And it really was amusing for me to see that. And you mentioned that this is also one big part of the service that you provide, which is on the technical side. Now we're moving away from the creative part and the distribution to the end consumers, but going to the technical side. And you mentioned also the satellites and the communication with all this infrastructure is something that personally I didn't know it works like that, but could you tell me something more about that?
Yes, A1 has its own teleport earth station situated in Austrian Alps. It consists of more than 50 antennas with different sizes. You saw the video. So different sizes from where actually we transmit or broadcast signal all over the world, more or less. So this teleport exists for more than 40 years already. And it's an integral part of A1 fiber connectivity as well worldwide. So we transport signal to the teleport and then manage the signal there and distribute it to different satellites.
Okay, so just to understand, where do you distribute the signal from to the teleport?
Yes.
So where from?
From the playout studios, where the signal is created, actually. So wherever it is created, so we transport it from there.
Okay.
We transport it via fiber or via IP delivery. There are nowadays different ways for this transportation.
And when it comes to the satellites, how does that work? Do you have to contract satellites? Who owns them?
Exactly.
Who is your supplier of satellites, let's say?
Yes, so there are different satellites which are dominant for different regions. And so we are choosing different partners in order to correspond to the needs of our customers, the TV channels. For Europe, we work with one company, for Asia with another company, and so on. So it's not our own satellite capacity, it's a third-party satellite vendors.
And how do you negotiate contracts? For how many years do
you normally do this? Yes, this is also within my team. So we negotiate contracts, usually long-term contracts, between 3 to 5 year contracts with satellite vendors.
Okay. Is it a straightforward process or...?
No, I would not say that any negotiation process is such a, is especially in this media industry, is not a straightforward process.
Okay.
So it's a different kind of negotiations with them, definitely.
Okay,
so,
let's dive into that. This is another part of this conversation that I want to cover, and it's negotiation. And you mentioned different kinds of negotiations. Can you say how different? How would you categorize them?
It all depends on the type of companies you're negotiating. And actually, to be more specific, not types of companies, but types of people, right?
Okay.
At the end of the negotiations between the companies are actually done by people, two groups of people who are communicating to each other and trying to find a win-win situation, right? In my job, I'm constantly negotiating. So I do sales a lot, business development and sales, and I do also a lot of buying as well. So procurement of either of satellite capacity, or we work with a lot of partners to which we outsource also. We sell their services to third-party customers. So it's a constant negotiation process. They even don't call it negotiation. It's simply a communication, the art of communicating with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you know that your goals and your strategy, and you like, you know where you would like to go, and then there are certain companies which can help you to reach your goal. The same way we help our customers. So they have their own strategy, they have goals to achieve, and so we are there to support them.
Okay.
So at the end, I don't see it as negotiation, as something really, because it has a little bit of negative sometimes feeling when you say negotiations. For me, it's really a partnership. Let's say you partner with the company or with people, the people in the company, in order to help each other.
Mm-hmm. And still, there are different people and different approaches to this communication. Could you give some examples of a couple of different negotiation or communication styles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how you reach an agreement?
Yes, there are typical profiles. If there are some tips which I could give, is the first thing is always create trust with the counterparty. And how do you create trust? By understanding the other party, understanding yourself, knowing yourself, your strengths and weaknesses, and also your communication style as well, and then also understanding, trying to understand the other people as well, and trying to put yourself in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start the whole process from this perspective, then I think it's completely a different approach, because you would like really to find a way to reach your goal. There are definitely a lot of different communication styles, which we all learn in the sales courses, negotiation courses. We were discussing the book Surrounded by Idiots. There you can see a lot of different communication styles, the more dominant one. Or in some courses or some books, I have, they're describing it as the red or lion. Somebody who speaks quickly, who wants decisions, with whom, when you speak with such a person, you should be really speaking short, with short sentences, very specific. This person makes quick decisions as well, and you can't lose the time of such a person. You can't be late for such kind of person. You should not annoy him or her. So another style is a person who is always supporting, you know, supporting everyone. So you need to communicate with such a person, then you need to know how to approach this person. You should not be aggressive, because he or she would take it personally.
Yeah.
Because this kind of person is a little bit more sensitive. So, and this person cannot take quickly a decision. So if you need a decision from such person, just give him or her the information. Give him or her the time to make his mind, and to start. He or she should also learn to trust you before that.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a little bit longer time. So there are different entertainer, for example, person who speaks a lot, who likes to have fun. So with such person, you can't go into a boring office, let's say.
Yeah.
Because he will be bored and you will not get anything from this conversation. Just invite for lunch, for dinner, or for a walk outside, or for some funny experience, so that he or she will remember it. And this is the way you communicate as well. So, but such kind of person, he has positive, actually any kind of communication style has positive and negative sides, so you need to know them. There was another, the fourth actually profile is of a person who is very a detailed oriented person, who loves to really to dig into the topic, to understand everything, and loves statistics. And this kind of person, you again, you should communicate openly, you should be very well prepared. Really, with the entertainer, for example, you can go and just improvise. Mm-hmm. Because he also doesn't, or she will not require statistics or information or reports and so on. But with this person, actually, you need really to be prepared and to give all the information needed. And this person would take a little bit longer time to make a decision, because he or she needs to really understand everything and so on. So at the end of the day, you need to adjust. You need to adjust to the different communication styles of the people. Knowing yourself and knowing themselves makes it much easier.
How do you get to know yourself and your own communication and negotiation style?
Well, let's say this is also a process. This is also a process where you are really, you need to self-reflect constantly, because we all change with time and with the experience we have. So we need to know what drives us, what makes us happy, what makes us unhappy, and just to somehow control yourself when some situation is going out of your control. You need to understand what caused it, and was it you, was it the other side, and how you should react, so that at the end of the day, for me, it's not important that I win, that I'm the right one in a certain argument. For me, it's more important really to everyone could be led into a certain situation and so on, but then you need to relax, to breathe in, and then to approach the situation in a better way so that you achieve your goal. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant process, yes, also knowing yourself, definitely.
And when you go into a process of negotiation, let's say, how do you prepare for the other party? Do you learn about them during the first meeting, during the first encounter, or is there any way to know their style beforehand?
Yeah. Usually I always prepare in advance about the company, about the people with whom I'm going to negotiate. And then you adjust your style during the first meeting, right? The first meeting is very important always. You can't make a first impression twice, right? So it's very important to set the background and also to show what is important for you immediately already on the first session. You should be open, and then you should also let them be open to you. So that for me, it's important to be clear from the beginning so that we know each other's goals and where we want to go. At the end, I see the negotiation as two parties joining the same boat at the end. So you need to know each other and to understand what is appropriate for each other party, but at the end you have a common goal.
That's a very good way of putting it. And now I want to ask you about, how did you prepare for this? Did you do some courses? Did you read some books? What would you recommend someone who wants to go in this direction to do?
Well, I was lucky enough to start in this sales and business development field many years ago, and to have a very good training. My first training actually was like I was 19, 20, and just finished school and maybe first year in university. So there was a training organized by Microsoft at the time. So we spent more than 2 weeks in a sales workshop, solution sales workshop, where actually they were teaching us how to communicate, how to present everything which is needed, actually how to negotiate, how to react where there are changes, because in the sales process there are always, and negotiation, even if you buy, there are always dynamics. Until you sign the contract, nothing is certain, right? So you need to be prepared for everything. And part of this training was exactly a very good profile of each other. They made a very good profile of us, and then they put us in groups which consists of completely different people. So my profile person had to communicate with a person who is completely different than me. So there was a constant struggle. And we didn't know because all the groups were really fighting with each other. And it was really a challenge. And our targets were from creating a business case or a business plan or a presentation to, for example, treasure hunt in the woods, for example, in the forests. So okay. They were really, well, I remember still one, we were in the forest and we had to solve a riddle, our group, together with everyone else. Of course, we were competing between each other and we had to be very fast. And in my group, actually, there was one of those really strong, aggressive people who wanted to win. I also wanted to win. However, I'm also interested in the human part. So there was a member in our group who got hurt. So she couldn't walk. And I said, okay, she got hurt. Let's help her and then continue. And then we had a huge fight. That's actually, this is making us slow. So we need to continue without her. So, and my my supporter part was completely against it. So I said, no way. So we either you help me to transport her. So we were carrying her in the forest at the end of the day. But it was really difficult to make him do that because he wanted just to succeed. Right.
Okay.
But these things actually, when you face the different communication styles, then you learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you don't take it personally. This is one very, very important thing that you should not take anything personally at the end of the day. So mm-hmm. it's work, these are different targets and maybe sometimes it works, maybe it doesn't work. You don't take it personally. You just end in a positive way and maybe in future you restart again. And another thing important for me is also to stay authentic. So you don't, at least I, this is my style, I'm not pretending to be someone else just mm-hmm. during the negotiation part. I believe a lot in this because authenticity actually leads to creating trust. And creating trust actually is the most important prerequisite for successful negotiations at the mm-hmm. end of the day.
Okay. That's a really great example, and everything you said here, I think that experience also prepared you for the rest of your life because you started at a young age, and probably the profiling that you mentioned that they did of you maybe may have helped you to later on know
for sure.
more about you.
Yes.
And
yes.
Maybe that's... Do you know the name of the course?
I have to check. For sure, they don't deliver it anymore. It was long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are a lot of books on sales and negotiation.
Okay, please tell me all of them.
And a lot of styles, actually, a lot of sales styles. So you can, starting from the challenger style, there is a book called like the...
Challenger
as well.
Sale, yeah.
Challenger sale, yes, thank you. For example, where... You have this provocative salesperson who understands everything about the market, about the person, but a little bit more, sometimes aggressively provoking the customer.
Mm-hmm.
There is also another consultative sales approach, where actually it's the opposite of the challenger. The consultative sales approach is where you are the best friend of the customer. So anytime the customer needs anything, even if it is not in your field, the customer would call you. You will be on speed dial. So mm-hmm. you know everything about your customers and you're supporting them. And their goals are also your goals. Sometimes you win from this, sometimes not. However, you're there and you know that anytime they need your support, then it's you.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many different styles, which I also analyzed during the years. So what I'm doing is more or less taking the best out of this, maybe 7-8 different approaches and just mm-hmm. using it intuitively whenever is needed in the situation.
Now I just started reading. This is also maybe it'll make you remember some other books. Like I have two, which I really like. One is Getting to Yes.
Yes.
And another one is Never Split the Difference.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know this one, but Getting to Yes,
yeah.
definitely.
Yeah, they have a lot of, yeah. let's say, commonalities. Mm-hmm. And Never Split the Difference was written by Chris Voss. He was a former FBI negotiator. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the idea practically in that book is never to just negotiate from positions. And then when you have one position, I have another, let's meet halfway. It's always about, it's practically the same thing that getting to yes is advocating, which is to understand the other party, to understand yourself, and maybe either you need less or they need less from what the midway is. Actually negotiating on principles, mm-hmm. which is really, really interesting.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
what you have been actually saying the whole time.
Yeah. And there is also The Tipping Point is another book which I like also a lot. Because in every process of communication, there is always a moment where you can make things work. And that's really, really important. However, every process at the start, everyone is enthusiastic. Then usually it gets to a point where, in the toughest negotiations, I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes it gets into a point when the companies are not willing to move a lot. And they get stuck, then the energy of the whole communication gets down. And then you should be able again to find a reason to raise the energy again and to keep the conversation going. And then when people are most enthusiastic about this cooperation, then you need to close it. Closure is a very important part.
Yes.
Yes, successful closure, because this is actually where most of the salespeople actually they can't reach. They can be really great communicators and so on, but then at the end they can't finish it, because either they themselves get demotivated during the process, because it's not a linear thing. Mm-hmm. It's always like a roller coaster sometimes. And when they stop believing in it and when they give up, then the result is not good at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So you should always keep the rhythm. And when you feel that now is the tipping point, then you just need to close it.
How do you do it? How do you close?
Is there a lot of tactics about it? I can't reveal all my secrets here. However, yeah, there are a lot of tactics. And at the end of the day, you have a target, and you know you have a deadline for this for achieving it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every time you start into a new partnership, you know that you need to finalize it within the next 3 months, 6 months, and so on. So this is always a common practice, actually, to use the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, we are approaching the deadline, and we agreed to most of the things. Maybe there are one, two things with which we need to make a compromise. But let's make the compromise so that we can step into this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and then it's really, for me, it's also important that every time you negotiate, it's a long-term partnership. It's at least in my job. So I continue communicating with my customers or the people whom I'm buying from them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that this is a very, very important tactic for me as well, that once we reach an agreement, then you continue setting up some regular calls or meetings or keeping contact with your partners, so that when they need you or when you need them, you can still speak with each other and help and develop with each other. And this is how actually the upsell process is happening.
Mm-hmm.
When you know your customer, even after you close the contract, this is another common mistake most salespeople are doing, when they close the contract and then they don't call you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Then definitely I would, if I'm buying from them, I would never consider them again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me it's important that somebody is really taking care of me during my development and so on. So, and this is how I also take care of them. So it's a common energy give and take process all the time. Yeah,
it's what you mentioned at the beginning. It's partnership.
It's a partnership, exactly. It's
mm-hmm.
a partnership. And you also can't push hard, because at the end of the day with these people, you would like to continue
exactly.
working, right? So you can, of course, until a certain moment, until a certain border, and you should never cross this border, because once you cross it, then there is no trust. Then suddenly the trust is over. And then it's very difficult to regain it again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Elena, do you have any closing remarks before we wrap up?
It was really nice speaking with you. And as a conclusion of our topics today, negotiation and successful partnerships, I would say three things which are really important: that we know ourselves, that we know also the counterparty, we try to understand them as well as we explain what our needs are, and we make it in a positive way so that we build successful partnerships long term.
Thank you so much.
Thank you too.
Hello again. Thank you for listening to this episode of VEU Executive Academy podcast, Know How to Inspire. Now, one more thing before you go. Please subscribe to our channel on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes, or check out our website at www.executiveacademy.at/podcast. That is executiveacademy.at/podcast. Last but not least, spread the word, because the more you share knowledge, the more inspiring it gets.